There's a pale horse coming, and I'm gonna ride it.
All right, we're back. Thank you for listening to the show today. Up next is Wes Yoder. He's founder of Ambassador Agency. Wes moved to Nashville in 1973 when he was 62. From the Amish and Mennonite community of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, to work in the music business. Why would you want to do that?
I don't know.
He was a pioneer in the formation of contemporary Christian music, so that's who we have to blame. Launched the careers of many well-known artists. He also created the first faith-based speakers bureau to assist speakers and authors. And in 1997, he launched Ambassador Literary Agency as a division of his company, which led to national media representation of many high-profile clients, including, Purpose-Driven Life guy. What's it, buddy? What's his name?
Your friend.
I like Rick. Rick and I have
spooned.
Warped. We have spooned. That is a true story. You don't want to tell the publicist that. He's worked a lot with Paul Young in The Shack, Mistaken Identity. Man, there's so much stuff here. I should have read his bio before we went to air. This is interesting. Bonhoeffer. Oh, let's get him on the line now. Wes, did you work with, what's his name? Metaxas.
Metaxas. Eric Metaxas. We did the Bonhoeffer book and the Wilberforce book. And then I think he fired me after we got a number one New York Times bestseller. I think that's what happened.
I wouldn't trust any of those guys involved with the New Canaan Society.
Listen, the New Canaan Society, we are the guys who don't have friends and don't know how to make them, but we're working on it. And then our wives, once we do find friends, have to put up with all our lousy friends that keep coming to our house for dinner, keep coming over and crying, keep coming over and laughing and, you know, having a beer or whatever. So, yeah, it's a pretty good deal.
I wish that whole thing was here in the Toronto area, because I would be a part of that in a heartbeat. It's like that. What was that group of? Was it Tony Campolo had a group of like outcasts or, you know, losers for Jesus or something like that? Were they called?
I don't know what they were called, but listen, if Tony didn't have a group like that, nobody did. I mean, come on, you know, Tony's the pioneer of all that. You know, in Europe, they've got a widespread men's movement called the Four Musketeers, and it's all based on the idea that you just don't have whatever it takes to live by yourself if you want to be alive, you know, and actually not have to drink 10 beers to say, I love you, man, you know, but really be able to say, I need friends, you know, to be able to admit our own needs as men. That whole thing gets programmed out of us, you know, about the time we're 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. And after that, it's kind of the man up thing, the stupid mantras that we put onto men's ministries and all kinds of things that don't work. But the reality is every man is searching for the dignity of his own humanity and wonders how he can find it. And we find it with each other as we learn the dialect of our own hearts, as we learn the language that comes with a real human experience. And it's a fascinating journey that I've been on.
Wow, man. Well,
I'm thankful for it.
That's all the time we have with Wes Yoder. All right, let's talk about this book, Bond of Brothers, Connecting with Other Men Beyond Work, Weather, and Sports. I just don't want to get intimate with a dude.
How about being friends with a guy?
But that's what I mean. Like, I love getting below the surface. I really do. But I don't want to do that with guys for a couple of reasons. One, any guy that's really good at it, it creeps me out. And then it does. And then guys that suck at it, well, it's not a good conversation. It's awkward.
Oh, it's just terribly awkward. And you know what tends to happen when you learn to go below the surface? A lot of guys go too far below the surface too quickly. And instead of letting just the natural juices of life flow, just the natural course, we're having dinner together, we're talking about it, we're talking about things that we actually care about and that we care about deeply. But it doesn't have to be a crybaby scene. Sometimes it is. Sometimes we need to cry. But most of the time, it's just like, how do you deal with this? How do you deal with this when this guy comes and wants to ask your daughter to get married, and is coming to ask you, Dad, if he can do this. There's still places where this actually happens, of course, and you have no conversation ahead of time with any other man about how do you evaluate if this guy's going to be a good fit for our family, even more importantly, a good fit for you, for your daughter. And I found myself exactly in that situation, as did some of my friends. We never had conversations about whether these guys were going to be a good match. So, oh, they're in love. Oh, great. That's fine. And I think there's a healthier way to go about it. And it doesn't have to be this weird word. I mean, I think we need to get rid of some words in man talk, like intimacy. Some of these words don't really work for what describes male friendship. And
no.
And as a result of it, we push away from it, and I understand why.
Yeah, I'm not good with a lot of people, and I'm not right, Tim? I mean, you know this about me.
I know. I barely made it into your top 10 list today.
But I but I would love a band of brothers when it comes time for my daughter, when she decides to marry some dude. I want these guys to bike her up something fierce, and we are going to show up at this dude's door, and we're going to have a conversation. And it's going it's going to start with, there are two things you need to know about me. Number one, I have more than enough money to make bail. Number two, I don't mind going back.
Right, exactly. And the thing of it is, Drew, you got to have at least enough guys to carry your coffin. I mean, this is the reason. This is the reason there's such a trend toward cremation. It only takes one person to do that. It doesn't have to be a man.
That's hilarious. That's a good bit, man. That is a good bit. All right, we can't talk about prison and then segue into this next subject, because we were kind of jokey about this, but we're gonna do it because that's what guys do. Dude, what a week that you've had. Can you please help our listeners? I don't know. Can you talk about this or no?
I think I can talk about it. I'm going to try to talk about it. I tried to talk about it yesterday and about fell apart. So, we're going to do this without becoming intimate here. Please, trust me.
Please. Okay. All right. If we end up spooning, remember, I'm big. Okay?
Okay. And you got a shoulder to cry on. Okay. So the week in Tennessee was insane because we put another one of our guys on death row to death. Executed him at 7:37. He was pronounced dead on Thursday night. His name is Donnie Johnson. In 1984, he committed a murder of his wife, it was terrible. All the things that they said about it, all of his admissions about this were true. He actually did it. But in prison, over the last 30, what does that come to, 35 years, something like that, 36 years?
Wow.
He has become a different man. He used to be a con man. The people who knew him back when said, oh, he's just a con man. Well, yeah, he sure was. And he was a murderer. He was a rough character. And this guy was transformed in prison by the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the gospel that he was transformed by was not some idea about Jesus, not some point of decision, oh, I'm going to make a decision about Jesus. That was actually getting introduced to the real Jesus, and there's a difference. And the real Jesus in prison, in the form of some other guys who were in there, who were had their lives in the course of transformation themselves, led him to a place in his life where he would literally apologize to everybody he had hurt. Not only apologize, ask for their forgiveness. Not only that, was willing to pay the consequence, if necessary, with his life, as required by the state. Of course, he didn't want to. But then in the course of this, he starts taking seminary courses and is an ordained pastor in the prison. And he is discipling other young murderers who are coming into prison and showing them the way of Jesus. And that's the guy we killed Thursday night in Tennessee. And, yeah, today is my day of anger. Yesterday was my day of weeping. Today is my day of anger. And what is incredible about this is that pastors in the city have said, we don't want this to happen. The man's adopted daughter, the daughter of the woman that he murdered, begged our governor not to let this execution go forward. And of course, it's a law in the state of Tennessee, but the governor can trump the law, holds in his hand the baton, he holds in his hand mercy, and he can use it if he wants to and elected not to.
Because it was a political maneuver? Why did he not say, no, let's not kill this guy?
I don't know. I'm going to find out. The governor is a friend of mine. And the guys inside Unit 2 at Riverbend Prison in Nashville are friends of mine. I had met Donnie a couple times. There are a couple other guys in the prison. One especially I'll tell you about in a little bit. Terry King is a very, very dear friend of mine. Life radically transformed by the shack, and we can go into that. But the governor, there's a strong Republican influence here, which is all, you know, law and order. I think somebody said to him, don't be weak on this first one, because, you know, just take the law and order route, or some other pastor. But I know there were pastors that said, please don't do this. And it was surprising to many people that he chose to let this execution go forward. I believe that it will be one of the greatest regrets of his life. And we're going to have to find ways to sit with him inside that sorrow when the time comes for sorrow.
You know, a little bit later, and you know this, Wes, because a little bit later in the show, well, just after you, we're going to interview two of your speakers from ambassadorspeakers.com. Melissa and Claire, both of them are abortion survivors. We're going to find out their story in a little bit. Quite often when Jesus people are picked on because they're anti-abortion, they'll say things like, oh, you're anti-abortion, but you're pro-death penalty. That makes no sense.
Correct.
So it's really nice to hear, of course it would be some Mennonite dude who's going to say, let's not be killing people, right? I mean, that's the kumbaya side of the Jesus community, the Mennonites and the Amish. I mean, if you guys can't spell peace, no one can.
No, you know the truth of this is a lot of the pro-life movement is slowly waking up, and there's a larger group of people who are traditionally pro-life on the baby side of it who are now also becoming anti-death penalty. There's a coalition in Tennessee, in fact, of liberals against the death penalty and conservatives against the death penalty, and they have formed a coalition to unite these divergent groups of people and say, look, we can work together here. But it is completely inconsistent to be pro-life while the baby is yet unborn and then to be pro-death and pro-death penalty in my view. I have no intellectual capacity to understand that contradiction.
Okay, help me understand your country, because we are going to get into this. Look, when your girls come up next, we're going to hear their story. After those girls, though, we're going to speak with Dr. Margaret Somerville. She's a professor of bioethics university at Notre Dame, Australia. But prior to that, she was with McGill University, and she's a big deal here in Canada. And I've had her on the show before. She's very well-spoken. We're going to try to understand the abortion conversation a little better. And, you know, Tim and I are sitting here as two awkward middle-aged white dudes who apparently have got no say in this conversation because we don't have a uterus. But when it comes to you guys down in the United States of America and the way you wrap your Bible in your flag, and when it comes to this abortion stuff, abortion in the United States is a political issue. It's nowhere near the political issue up here. It's still a political issue, but nowhere near what it is down there. So here's what I want to know from you. How do the God people keep screwing this up? If they really believe that life begins at conception and therefore abortion is murder, if they really believe that, how do they keep screwing it up? And what I'm talking about here is the Alabama decision. Please explain to me the punishment and how that aligns up with the rest of criminal punishments being doled out by the courts. I don't understand. What is it, 99 years?
It's 99 years for an abortionist. I'm not sure how long it is for the woman, but if a 13 or 14-year-old girl is raped and she goes and has an abortion in Alabama, she can spend more time in prison than her rapist. This law, I am confident, will not stand, but it is a stupidity of the way the evangelical church has gotten involved in politics. And I don't mean that we shouldn't have involvement in politics. I don't mean that as a church itself, as an official church, I don't think we should. I believe Christians can be involved, but as this has developed more and more, it is clear to me that we are the least savvy people in politics in the world. In 1973, when Roe versus Wade came before the Supreme Court, and all of this came up for votes and for passing, the evangelical community said no abortions of any kind for any reason, no matter what. If we had understood politics and compromise, and that these things are best done in a large society incrementally, we probably could have outlawed 60, 70, 80, 90% of all abortions at that time if we had left room for medical choices, medical concerns of the doctor, rape and incest. But no, we wouldn't even do that. And the Alabama law is a throwback to the stupidity of 1973. And I don't mind saying it to anybody in Alabama or anybody in America or anybody in Canada who might want to hear it, because it is a stupid tack politically. And so, we have already absolutely overfilled our prisons with unjust sentencing. Like, the three strikes you're out under Clinton didn't help the impoverished community. It didn't take into consideration circumstances. It was just three strikes you're out. Some of those laws are being overturned here, but our criminal justice system is in deep need of reform.
How do you really feel?
Yeah, I told you it was my day to be a little ticked off here.
Yeah, so, well, you're on the right show.
And I just want to go on the record for the Canadian Mennonites who might be listening. That no Mennonites down here that I know, and certainly no Amish people, wrap their Bibles in flags. So we're not doing that part either. So good. at least we have there really is this Anabaptist rebellion, in a sense that when it, I grew up that way. I spent about 28 years with the Reformed churches, have returned entirely to my Anabaptist roots, because I see in the teachings that we have and that we try to put into practice an actual belief that Jesus meant the stuff he said, and that we actually, that it does apply to the American street, the North American street, the European, it applies to the street. And the early reformers didn't have a very good sense of that, how to apply to the European street. They discovered some important things about grace and certainly some important things about scripture.
Right.
But we still, as an evangelical community, haven't thought through very well, what does it mean that the teachings of Jesus apply to the street and apply to the laws? How does this work?
I wish you lived closer, man. You'd be a good hang.
It wouldn't be intimate, brother.
That's good. All right, listen, before we say goodbye to you, I want people to know that your book that was written back in 1932 is still for sale.
It is. And can I, do you have time for me to say one or two more things about Donnie Johnson here at the end?
Heck yeah. Go.
Okay. We were standing outside the prison singing softly and tenderly Jesus is calling. The third verse says, "Oh, for the wonderful love he has promised for you and for me. Though we have sinned, he has mercy and pardon for you and for me." We're standing out there crying inside the prison. Donnie is strapped to the gurney. They're getting ready to inject him with the poison. He says, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit in the name of Jesus." And then he starts singing, "No more crying there. We are going to see the King. No more dying there. We are going to see the King. There's a better way, people. There's a better way, and we're going to find it. I hope it's in our lifetime."
Man, I don't even know how to recover from that. That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. There's a reconciliation table inside that prison that I have sat with these guys. And if you are willing to admit what you've done, come to Jesus, live in peace with your brothers in the prison. You're invited to that reconciliation table. And it is astounding, the transformation. There is a better church. There is a better church in Unit 2 at Riverbend Prison in Nashville than there is most of the places outside in the city where we have the freedom to walk in and out on a Sunday morning.
All right. Let's leave it there. Just leave it there. Wes Yoder. He's the founder of Ambassador Agency. The website is ambassadorspeakers.com. You dig this guy's passion? Go to this website, and he's got a whole bunch of people there that are speakers that have the same passion. Incredible list of speakers. Really, one of the best I've seen. Wes, I appreciate you a lot. I do. I like the way you do stuff. I like how you do the Jesus thing.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much.
You're not intimately irritating.
Hey, if you really need a friend, come see me sometime. I have rocking chairs on my porch for people like you.
Beautiful. Wait, did you just call me old? What?
They have the potty built right in.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
A little
right.
Denture cup right beside it.
My gosh.
Wes Yoder, dude, thank you very much, man. Thank you.
Thank you, brothers. All right, talk soon.
Bye-bye. Bye. Wes Yoder. Yeah, I like that guy. So often it's the guys that are representing other people who speak that have the most powerful things to say.
Yep.
And I'm sad that it took me 16 years to get him on the show. Interesting guy.
Mm-hmm.